Wednesday, April 1st, 2015, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado, coming to you on a bright, sunny spring day here in the Mile High City. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every Wednesday. You can get it on iTunes, you can download it, you can share it. Feel free to grab a random stranger right off the street and make them listen to it. If you enjoy the show, and I'm hoping that you do, our numbers are going up. I'm hearing some good things, some good feedback from listeners. If you enjoy the show, or you know, even if you don't enjoy the show, please go on iTunes, give us that rating, give us a review. Just a real simple review, greatest show ever, whatever you want to put out there, and you know, let people know, because that does get us on the best podcast list. We do appreciate you listening. If you would like to get a hold of me for any reason, and you can find me on a number of different places, Twitter handle is at Daily Dose Sports. At Daly Dose Sports. You can find me on Facebook, Daily Dose Sports. If you would like something to liven up your boring Facebook feed filled with information about people that you used to go to school with 20 years ago, feel free to add us, Daily Dose Sports. You will like what you get. And you know, we do have a website. If you haven't checked out the website yet, what are you waiting for? You need to go check that out. Number of different articles, different polls, few different things that you can find on there. Couple new things we've got coming out. You've got the daily debate on there that you might want to check out. Couple new articles you'll enjoy. That website is dailydosesports.wordpress.com. You can find it really, really easy. And we do put new stuff up every single week. You want to check it out. You know, we got a lot of things to talk about this week. Do you realize this? Do you realize this is episode number 17? Has it been going that long already? Episode 17. We are rolling along here at the Daily Dose. And you know, we've got a lot of things to talk about. Obviously, we're going to, you know, preview the Final Four. College basketball is, you know, going well. It's been a very, very entertaining tournament. Gonna talk about the Final Four and talk a little bit about maybe who could be playing in that final game. Recap a little bit of the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, and at least talk about some of those things. I've got some NFL news coming out that you will want to hear, a few different stories that I have a take on, and we are going to talk about a team in the NBA that is being overlooked, and you may want to take a second look at them. And of course, a very popular segment, you do want to stick around, check out the Daily Dose Top 5. Like I said, it's a popular segment here. I always seem to get feedback on the Top 5. You will want to check that out. We've got April Fool's Day today. Are you an April Fool's Day kind of person? I gotta be honest. And you know, you have these certain people, you have these people that are out there that April Fool's Day, they wake up that morning and I don't know what it is. There are certain people and they're just like, oh boy, today is my day to shine. I'm gonna make it happen. And we've got the caramel dipped onions and the pregnancy stories and the getting married or divorced stories. And I can't get into it too much. It doesn't do that much for me personally. My idea of a good April Fool's joke, what I like to do is I like to, you know, tell people I don't like really, really nice things. That's just kind of my way of April Fool's. And I never do say April Fool's at the end of it. I just kind of like to lob those things out. I will say this. April Fool's Day has got to be the worst day ever to have something seriously go wrong, like a heart attack or find out you are pregnant or one of those horrible things. If you find out on April Fool's Day, there's going to be some skepticism out there. You know, a lot of things coming out in the world of sports right now. If you didn't see yesterday, Jameis Winston, Florida State quarterback, had his pro day. And of course, it was amazing. It was amazing. Somehow, against no defense, throwing to his, you know, selected receivers, and against, like, I don't know, brooms or whatever, Jameis Winston managed to look very, very good. And then he really shook the sports world when he said the Tampa Bay Buccaneers should select me number one because I'm the best player in the draft. Whew. Whoa. We are getting some big news now. Of course, his pro day looked amazing. Pro days, has there ever been a pro day that didn't look good? I mean, you're going against no one. In your stadium, doing your thing, throwing to your people, of course your pro day looked great. Remember last year Johnny Manziel had the coaches out there with brooms? He had a couple, they were the defensive linemen, I guess, and they had some brooms out there that they were waving at him. Johnny looked good. I don't know. He really beat those brooms. Did you see what he did to the brooms? Gonna look good. And then Jameis Winston, what else is Jameis Winston going to say? Is he gonna be like, if it's you, I mean, if I'm you, I'm taking someone else. I wouldn't take me. Have you seen the stupid things I do? Do you see what I do when I'm left to my own devices on my own spare time? I get into a lot of trouble. And that's just the stuff you guys know about. There's a lot of stuff out there that people don't even know. A lot of stuff. What else is he gonna say? Of course he's gonna say he's the best player. He wants to get selected first. Got a lot of interesting things going on. Here's another story coming out. Patriots owner. I told you this Aaron Hernandez, trial was going to get interesting. It started to get interesting yesterday. Patriots owner Robert Kraft testified that Aaron Hernandez told him he was innocent when asked whether or not he was involved in the murder of Odin Lloyd. Apparently, Kraft said he went into the facility, found Hernandez in the weight room working out, pulled him into an office for a quick talk and said, I understood there was some sort of an incident, wanted to know whether or not he was involved, and he said he was not involved. He was innocent, and he hoped that everything would come out that he was innocent because he had been in the club at a time. At the time of the murder, he was in a club, except now we know that he wasn't in a club. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Starting to get interesting. Starting to get interesting. You know what's going to be really, really interesting is when they do call Bill Belichick to the stand, and I think that's coming. I think that is coming. You know what's going to be even more interesting? What if they found out that Bill Belichick killed all these people instead of Aaron Hernandez, and that Hernandez was just a pigeon to take the fall? Okay, I'm not going to go that far. I won't go that far. I'll back it up just a little bit. But if Bill Belichick has to take the stand, it's going to be must-see TV. I will say this. Going into this trial with the information that the judge was allowing and some of the, testimony that the judge was going to allow, I didn't think Hernandez was going to get found guilty. I'm starting to change that a little bit now. I'm starting to think he might get found guilty. And here again, we've talked about this before, and here's the bad news. You've got another trial waiting for you when this is all done. That's not good. The Baltimore Ravens yesterday decided that they should sign quarterback Matt Schaub to be their backup quarterback. Matt Schaub, 33, released by the Raiders, he couldn't get on the field for the Oakland Raiders. And I understand the Oakland Raiders have Derek Carr, and the Raiders have Derek Carr. And not really anything else. But the reason that Schaub couldn't get on the field was because, by all reports, he can't throw the ball more than like 25, 30 yards. What is Baltimore doing? As far as I know, Schaub can't punt. So I don't know exactly what it is that they're bringing him in to do. Because I don't think he's capable of playing in the NFL anymore. He couldn't play for the Raiders. If you can't play for the Raiders, I've got news for you. You probably can't play any worse. Here's some more bad news for the Raiders. Not that, Matt Schaub leaving isn't good news, but, we keep hearing how the Raiders are kind of starting to figure things out and how that, their GM has kind of turned the corner. And now with Al Davis gone, they're really starting to put this back together. Here's a bad sign. The Raiders released defensive lineman Antonio Smith yesterday. Smith was going to account for $4 million. And he had just 20 tackles last year, despite starting every game. Now, when you see this, here's one of our good free agents, and we've already cut him. Slow down on telling me just how great the Raiders' free agency has been this year. Because I'm not sure it's as good as they think it is. It might not be, quite that good. In NASCAR news, I know. Can you believe I'm talking NASCAR? What is the world coming to? But NASCAR has docked driver Ryan Newman 75 points and suspended his crew chief for 6 races. Fine is going to be $125,000 after it was found that the team had doctored their tires during a March 22nd race at Auto Club Speedway. Also suspended, they suspended Newman's engineer and his tire technician. Now, I want you just to keep that in mind. I just want you to keep that in mind that Ryan Newman apparently was a bad, bad boy. And they suspended him and he got some trouble. And Newman has, you know, I think he had at least a good showing that day. I just want you to keep that in mind. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in just a few minutes, but just keep that in mind. Couple of moves in college basketball coaching wise, because we know that Texas had fired coach Rick Barnes, and now Tennessee has already hired Rick Barnes. Texas is now looking to fill their coaching vacancy. They're talking to Shaka Smart. They're talking to Greg Williams from Wichita State. A couple different pieces moving around, but Tennessee was quick to hire Rick Barnes. Rick Barnes is a very, very good coach. Rick Barnes has won everywhere he's been. Doesn't matter where he's been. Tennessee got themselves a good coach. I think Texas probably jumped the gun in getting rid of him. Rick Barnes is a very, very good coach. We'll see if they can get the coaches that they think they can get. A lot of these universities, they sit there and say, we're going to fire this guy because we like who this guy is. You better be sure you have that guy before you go firing a coach like Rick Barnes. Here's another move that took place that I'm not sure how to feel about it. St. John's, fired coach Steve Lavin last week or whatever it was. They have now hired former St. John's player Chris Mullen. And that might be a good move. I don't know. Chris Mullen's a very bright guy. He doesn't have to take the job. He's taking the job because he cares about the program. He's taking the job because he feels like I can go back to St. John's and make it what it is. It should be a powerhouse back there. You can recruit New York City, and if you just got New York City kids, you should be loaded. But I got to tell you personally, from a personal standpoint, I was disappointed. I was disappointed when I heard that St. John's hired Chris Mullen. Just me personally. And it's not because I don't think Chris Mullen can coach. I don't have any idea if he can coach. I don't know. We'll see. He's a bright guy. I've heard, you know, him on broadcasts and stuff. Chris Mullen's a very bright guy. He was a very good player. That doesn't always, you know, transfer to being a good coach. A lot of times, in fact, we see the good players struggle to coach because they look at players and go, why can't you do what I do? Why can't you do how I used to do? And they struggle with that aspect of it. But Chris Mullen is a very, very bright guy. That's not the reason I'm disappointed that St. John's hired him. Let me tell you why I am upset that St. John's hired Chris Mullen. Do you know who wanted that job? Do you know who wanted that job and came out publicly and said, I want the job? Ron Artest. Ron Artest wanted that job. Oh, you want to talk about blowing out candles on your birthday and making a wish? You want to talk about, you know, you see a falling star and making a wish? Please, oh, please let Ron Artest get a job like that. A Meta World Peace, Kung Fu Panda, whatever his name is, you know who I'm talking about. He is a former St. John's player, and he had stated publicly, I should be the guy to have that job. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the insanity that would come flying out of him after games? Oh, I am so, 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 so disappointed that he didn't get that job. He is just, he is an entertaining guy. And I think he is coaching a little bit, something. I don't know if he's coaching overseas. He's doing something. I don't know, but he felt, he might even be playing over in Italy or something somewhere. I don't know. But he said he wanted the St. John's job, and I wish so bad. Oh, can you imagine how good that would have been? Oh, that would have been good stuff. Let's talk about the Final Four, because the Final Four is set. Final Four is set, and we've got, we've got three ones, and we've got a seven. And then, you know, the selection committee is always quick to point out, look at the ones we got. What happened on the seven? What happened on the seven? I realize you seeded and you probably got three of the four teams, the best teams in it, you know, there. And honestly, Arizona to me looked like a really, really good two there. But that's the point. The seven in Michigan State, what was Michigan State doing being a seven? Did anyone look at Michigan State coming down the stretch and just go, yeah, they look like about a seven? Worst case, probably a four. committee doesn't always get all those things right. They like to talk about how well they do and what good picks they make, but Michigan State at a 7, I think we all saw that one coming, at least on some level. I'm not saying we saw them going to the Final Four, but we knew they weren't a number 7 seed. That's a tough, scrappy team. Let's go through each of these teams and kind of look at these games. Because obviously Kentucky's the favorite. Kentucky is the big, big dog. We all know that. I think we've seen that. They had to survive Notre Dame. Notre Dame gave them all they wanted. And despite probably being outplayed for most of the game, they find a way to win. If Notre Dame had gotten anything, I mean anything, on their last 2-3 possessions, they win that game. But it shows how good you are going to have to be if you're actually going to beat Kentucky. 36, 37, 38 minutes, it's not enough. It's not enough. You've got to play a full 40 if you're going to beat this team. Let me ask you this. Why do we, I get the feeling, we kind of hate Kentucky. Like, I don't think we hate the players, but we do kind of hate Kentucky, don't we? Are you rooting for Kentucky if you're not a Kentucky fan? I doubt it. Because I think we kind of look at Kentucky, they're kind of the bullies. They're kind of the big dog. And for some reason, doesn't it kind of feel like Calipari's getting away with something? I don't know what he's getting away with, but doesn't it feel like he's getting away with something? Is he? Are we going to find out? We know Calipari's history. Let's be real honest. We know what he did at UMass. We know what he's always kind of done. Doesn't it feel a little bit like he's maybe getting away with something? Maybe he's, we're going to find these guys rolling around in you know, brand new cars and stuff. I don't know. But I do feel like there's this feeling among college hoops fans, like, we don't really hate the players, but we kind of hate Kentucky. We don't really like Kentucky. I want to see, you know, how this team plays in this next round, because I realized they were there just a year ago, but now it's not just the pressure of winning. It's the pressure of the perfect season and the pressure of we're supposed to win this. It's very, very different when the expectation is you should win it all. You should win it all. Here's another question to just throw out there. Just you know, throw it out there. If Kentucky were to win it all, John Calipari going back to the NBA, does he still have those aspirations of winning at the professional level? Or is he good where he's at? Because let's be honest, Kentucky can pay him every bit as much as an NBA franchise can. Name your NBA franchise. I don't care who it is. Kentucky can pay him just as much. They've got money. I'm going to throw out some names to you, and I just want you to think about this. Greg Popovich, Rick Adelman, Larry Brown, George Karl, Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, Jerry Sloan, Lenny Wilkins. Winning as coaches in NBA history. What do they all have in common? Not exactly the screaming, yelling, motivational kind of guys. They understand how to manage people. Those are the winningest coaches. I don't know if Calipari can coach that level. And I kind of wonder if he has seen that and he realizes, hey, I'm at the top of the mountain. I can do this every year. Every year we can be favored in the national tournament. We can do that pretty much every single year. Looking at the team themselves, looking at the Wildcats themselves, obviously you have the Harrison twins, and it just seems like they just find ways. They just find ways. You know, Towns, big kid inside. Everybody talks about him. And you know the kid, I still like Willie Cauley-Stein. I like Cauley-Stein a lot. And it seems like he can defend anywhere, anyone. I don't know which of these kids is going to transfer the best to the pros. It'll be interesting to see what kind of kids they make when they get onto the next level. But Cauley-Stein is a kid to me. I really like his game. I just think it transfers well. He can rebound. He can block shots. He can change shots. And he can step out and he can defend a two or a three if he had to. So long and just takes up so much space. Kentucky, the favorite, definitely. Wisconsin. They're going to play Wisconsin a little bit. You know, Wisconsin, if you saw that game on Saturday night, Wisconsin knocked off Arizona with great, great shooting. I mean, they shot the lights out versus Arizona. And you know, the thing about Arizona that I thought was interesting is when I look at Arizona, I thought Arizona matched up, actually they would match up pretty well with Kentucky. They'd match up pretty well with a Michigan State or maybe even with a Duke. The one team that Arizona I didn't think matched up that well with, Wisconsin. And turned out that that's what bit them, because Wisconsin was just that wrong team to face. You know, Wisconsin shot the lights out. You know, shot 56% from the field, shot 67% outside the arc from 3-point, 67% from three. And you know, then they're always pretty steady from the line. And here's the thing about Wisconsin, and we talked about this a little bit last week. They don't turn the ball over. They just don't. They're so efficient. They don't turn the ball over. They get to the free throw line. Those two things right there are ways that Wisconsin wins. It is so, so valuable. You know, we talked about back in the old days on the radio show how valuable free throws attempted are. A lot of times you can look at a box score and say who attempted more free throws a lot of times wins the game. Free throw attempts are huge. And the thing with Wisconsin, they usually make more free throws than the other team attempts. They get a lot of free throws. I love Frank Kaminsky. I love what he does. He's a tough kid. He rebounds. He's not afraid to step inside. He's a good enough shooter that if you don't come out on him, he will hit that three. But he's very, very good with that slow shot fake and then one long stride and he's right down the paint. But the kid, to me, that you really have to worry about is Sam Dekker. And Sam Dekker has played really, really well. He's kind of quiet. You haven't really heard much about him. You kind of, he's the other white guy on a team full of white guys. But you look at Dekker, as the further they've got into the tournament, I mean, he's had 23 against Carolina. He put up 27 the other night against Arizona. Sam Dekker is stepping up big time. So when I look at Kentucky versus Wisconsin, I look at who can control the paint. Because, you know, Wisconsin isn't efficient because they hit the threes. They're not efficient because they you know, knock down 67% of their three-point attempts. That's not what makes them efficient. You know, there is a calculator that coaches use. It's called the KenPom efficiency calculator. And what it basically takes is how many possessions you have and then how many points you get per possession. So, you know, like, for example, a team like Wichita State, they were at about a 113. That was what they got. Michigan State, you know, still going. They're at about a 115. That's their, you know, calculation and their points per possession. You know what Wisconsin is? Wisconsin is at 128. That's how efficient they are. Just for the record, Kentucky is at 119. What I want to see in this game on Saturday, I want to see how Wisconsin defends Towns. I want to see how they defend Karl Anthony Towns, because Notre Dame, they kind of three-quartered him, they kind of played behind him, and then they just let, you know, their defender go one-on-one. There was no help, there was no dig down from the guard, there was no help from the backside. They just kind of said, hey, we feel like we can play you straight up and we don't want to gamble with anyone else. And what I want to see is how will Wisconsin play him? Because I have the sneaking suspicion that they're not just going to let him go one-on-one down there in the paint. You end up getting in trouble, you know, against Notre Dame. I think Towns ended up with 25. That hurts you. So I want to see, you know, if they dig down with a guard, are you leaving a perimeter player open and can they knock down the shot? Or if you bring across help from the backside and run at him, can he turn and find the open shooter? And again, can they knock down the shot? Going to be very, very interesting. I think what Wisconsin needs to go inside, see if they can draw some fouls. Can they defend the post? Can they defend Towns? And then I think they have to hope Kentucky struggles outside. Very, very good defensively, Wisconsin is. They pressure without fouling. That's very, very valuable. I think Kentucky loses or wins a close one. I think Kentucky beats Wisconsin in a close one. I will say this, and keep this in mind. When these teams start playing in the big domes, and you have it's a different look behind the basket when you're shooting at the, you know, you're playing at the college gym, and that's one thing. When you get in these big domes, it looks different when you look through the basket. And it's not what people always say, oh, you're not going to shoot as well. Your shooters are going to shoot it. It's not those shots. That's not the ones you worry about. It's those little mid-range 8 to 15 feet. Those are the ones you start missing, because it is a little bit of a different look when you're playing in these big domes that they play these games in. I want to see who can knock down those shots. Like I said, I think Kentucky is going to win a close one, because I think their defense is so good Should be an interesting game. That to me is the game of the weekend. I think that's a really, really good one. Let's move over to the other side. Let's talk a little bit about Michigan State and Duke. Why is it that Tom Izzo teams seem to turn it on when they get to March? Like, they get to March and all of a sudden the switch just clicks, more confidence, they're playing tough. And you know, to me, I think the reason is, for one thing, Tom Izzo teams are tough. And I know they kind of got that reputation a few years back. They weren't quite as talented. And so what they did was they made their living on rebound. They made their living on putbacks. They weren't as talented. But there's one aspect of Tom Izzo teams. They understand how to value possessions. You know, there's certain points in a game that you can usually look at and say, that wasn't the game-winning shot. That wasn't the game winner. But if we don't get that basket there, or if we don't get that stop there, we don't win that game. And Izzo's team just seem to have a knack for finding that key play to make. And the other thing that Michigan State does, and I don't think they get a lot of credit for, is they always seem like they have great guards. And you look at them this year with Travis Trice, Denzel Valentine, but even going beyond that, going in the past, how they always get so, I mean, look at guys like Kalen Lucas, Darrell Summers, Maurice Ager, Shannon Brown, going back to even Charlie Bell and Mateen Cleaves, they always seem to have very, very good guard play. And when you get to this time of year, you better be able to trust your guards. Because if you can't trust your guards, you're going to get sent home early. And I don't care how great your bigs are. If your guards can't get them the ball, it doesn't matter. You know, the other thing is that Michigan State, they just seem to always spread the ball really well. They pass the ball really well. They I believe are one of the highest in the nations, as far as assists and how many of their points come off of assists. One downfall of Michigan State, and one to keep in mind, they don't shoot free throws very well. Somehow managed to outlast and I think an outmanned Louisville team. I know Louisville was the 4 and Michigan State was the 7. I'm looking at Louisville going, how are you a 4? Like, they didn't seem like they were that overly talented. Couldn't shoot. They're just, speaking of coaches that get a ton out of their players, Rick Pitino gets a ton out of what he has. I realize, I understand he's starting to look a little more like Laura Flynn Boyle every day, but Rick Pitino gets a ton out of his players. Here's another thing, sorry, random side note, me going off on something else. There was a play in the Louisville-Michigan State game late in that game when Wayne Blackshear had to leave the game because he had the bloody nose. Do you remember that? He had to leave the game for a little bit because he had the bloody nose. Why is it in basketball that blood is so taboo? I mean, think of other sports. Football, we see guys bleeding down their jersey, down their pants. You'll see it on the wristbands. Baseball's not really good. Baseball, sometimes you see a little blood trickling down their leg from where they just, you know, gave themselves a steroid shot. That's maybe not a good example. Obviously, hockey. You'll see someone with like a lacerated kidney in hockey, and it's no big deal. He doesn't even miss a shift. Blood's all over the ice. They just come out and scrape it off and keep playing. Boxing, of course. You have, you know, I mean, the guys in the corner, they have gloves on, but like there's blood all over the canvas. There's blood all over the shorts. There's blood all over each other. No, but basketball. Hey, everybody, there's blood. Everybody get out. There's blood. Stop the game. What are we doing? There's blood. I don't understand. Our basketball, do we have a real concern about the blood of basketball? I don't know how that works. A little bit odd to me. Anyways, let's move on to Duke. I've got to confess something. And those of you who know me or have been with the show for a while or have listened to the show for a while, you know, I write articles and I do the podcast and I've done the radio and done some stuff, interviews and stuff. I don't consider myself like media though. I'm not like media guy. I'm like media-ish. But when you're media, you have to be objective. You know, I like this team. I don't like this team. I got to make a confession. I kind of still hate Duke. I'm sorry. And if you're a Duke fan, I'm not mad at you. I kind of hate Duke. And the thing is, it's not the team. It's not the players. To be honest, I really don't know your players. I love Jahlil Okafor. I think he's a great player. I like a few of the kids that you guys have. I mean, Tyus Jones, Quinn Cook. I like your players. I don't really like Duke. And you know what it is? You know, but I think it really honestly is for me. For one, the Duke fans, they're kind of the Yankees fans and the Cowboys fans. And, oh, yeah, I'm also a Duke fan. Oh, yeah, big surprise. And then, you know, it's the they seem to get every single ref's call. Did you see the game against Utah? Loose ball. Two players dive for it. Not only is it not a jump ball, it's a foul against Utah because Krzyzewski has been on that official since the tip. And so Krzyzewski gets every single call, every single night. It's not like a perception. It's what happens. You know, the floor slapping. Oh, we really need to stop this time. Everyone slap the floor. Let's all slap the floor, guys. Okay, Wojo, I guess. The flopping. They flop like Brazilian soccer players. You know, and the other thing, the squeaky clean image. They have this image like Duke never does anything wrong ever. Except for the fact that we know for a fact that when Corey Maggette was there, he was getting paid. I hate to break this to you. He was getting paid. And the whole situation with Chris Duhon's mom getting a job that she wasn't even qualified for through a Duke booster. But of course, it's never Coach K. Coach K's just, you know, oh no, he's an angel. He's a perfect guy. Can you imagine if those same things happened with this team with Kentucky? We would be all over them. We would be hammering, oh, how has he not been fired? He's so dirty. He's so shady. He's just a little too slick. Coach K can get away with anything. I am absolutely convinced. And you can't argue with what he's done. He is in his 12th Final Four. 12 Final Fours. That ties John Wooden. And to be fair, when you really look at the situation, and I know John Wooden backers, I love Coach Wooden, read all the books, the whole pyramid, I get it. But what Krzyzewski does is probably more impressive. There wasn't the competition out there where anyone could beat anyone. You didn't have the depth of competition that Coach K has now. And let's be real clear, a lot of times Wooden had tournaments where there was only 22 teams in the whole tournament. You won like three games and you made it to the Final Four. What Krzyzewski has done is amazing. Still don't like him. Anyways, Duke's team this year, another team that is very, very efficient on offense. Obviously, Okafor is so good inside. I don't know that I see him just dominant, but he's so young. But he's so good inside and great at passing out. Very, very comfortable with his back to the basket. Can take it in and score. He's strong. They've got the guards. They've got, you know, Justice Winslow and like I said, Jones and Cook outside that are capable. This Duke team is capable of scoring points in bunches. And if you sleep for just a second, they'll run off and go on a, you know, 12-2 kind of run. And you're going, what just happened? We were just in the game. And they just boom, 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 boom. Quick, quick, quick scores. Defense has been better, but you can go inside against Duke and get points if you have the people to do that. You can go inside against Duke and get score. So when I look at Michigan State versus Duke, I'm trying to come up with some sort of a scenario that I see Sparty hanging or winning this, and I'm struggling. I wonder if Duke's offense is going to be too much. Michigan State will have to defend very, very well. And then they're going to have to attack inside and go at Okafor, go at some of the bigs and see if they can draw some foul trouble. If Duke shoots the ball well, or Michigan State turns the ball over a few times, or they don't, you know, dreaded free throws, miss a few free throws, this could get ugly. I think we may be looking at a Kentucky versus Duke final. And, you know, Kentucky fans, they want another shot at Duke. They're still mad about the whole Laettner thing. And, of course, the reason I hate Christian Laettner, that brought it all back. So, you know, they would love to get another shot at Duke. And make no mistake, Duke would absolutely love to ruin Kentucky's perfect season. Nothing would make them happier than to be able to do that. Should be a fun weekend. We got Saturday Final Four and then of course Championship Monday. If you want to check me out on Twitter, probably be live tweeting a few of those games. Find me at Daily Dose Sports on Twitter. Let's talk a little bit about the NFL. Had a few things come out in the NFL that I want to talk about. This was kind of a big story locally. Like I've told you, I'm in Denver And yes, we are a podcast. We are a show that talks about sports everywhere. A little bit of a Colorado flavor. Got to talk a little bit about the Denver Broncos and Demaryius Thomas. Their wide receiver, Demaryius Thomas, was designated as a franchise player. They say that the Broncos and Thomas, in his representation, are working on a long-term deal. But since he has not signed his guaranteed contract yet, and his contract that is going to be, that he will eventually probably sign, is 1 year, $12.8 million. But he has until July 15th to sign it. And as a result, Demaryius Thomas isn't going to be at any of the offseason workouts. He's not going to be there. And do you know why he's not going to be there? Because he doesn't have to be there. If your job told you, that's just how the NFL is. If your job told you, think of your job right now. I work at, for this phone company, or I work for this moving company, or whatever. And your job told you, you can come in and really help your team get ready. Or, there's nothing we can really do. We still got to pay you. Are you coming in? No. No, you're not. Why would he? So this isn't a surprise. This kind of came out as, well, Demaryius Thomas isn't going to participate in offseason workouts. Yeah. We knew that last year when we saw this whole franchise player thing coming. We knew that was coming. Talk a little bit of other teams in the NFL. The Atlanta Falcons have been fined $350,000 and are going to forfeit a draft pick in next year's draft. Not this year. I don't know why it's not this year. Is that just arbitrary? We just get a pick? Let's just pick a number. 2016. Okay, yeah, that sounds good. I would think it'd be this year. Anyways, they're going to forfeit a draft pick and get fined $350,000 for piping in fake crowd noise during games. The NFL came down pretty hard on that. Said, no. You don't get to do that. And the reason for that, because people are like, who cares? Doesn't Seattle do that? Sort of. The thing about Seattle is what they did was they built their stadium as a Music City sound hall, so everything just reverberates all over the place. Is it fake? Sort of, but they're not going out with speakers and actually blasting it when the other team has the ball. You can play stuff, you can have music play, but you can't do it when the other team has the ball. Apparently, the Falcons were actually playing crowd noise even louder when the other team was trying to call signals. There was an advantage. Integrity of the game is the reason that the NFL came down on this. So Atlanta Falcons are going to get drilled. And they're not the only ones. The Cleveland Browns also got dinged yesterday. Their general manager, Ray Farmer, has been suspended without pay for the first four games of this next season. And the team has also been fined $250,000. You know what the Browns were doing? They were sending text messages from the box down to the field, from the GM down to the coaches. Now, you might sit there and say, who cares? Who cares? Who cares if he sent a text message? Well, there's a couple things to keep in mind. What if you're up above and you are zoomed in on a TV broadcast and you are seeing the other coach's lips and you're seeing what play he's calling? What if you're getting certain information about an injury, or so that has been banned. It's not like these guys don't know. That's the thing about all the cheating that goes on. It's not like these guys don't know. It's not like there's a rule against texting. I had no idea. They all know. And again, when the NFL looks at this, they look at it and they say, this could be an advantage. And as a result, the integrity of the game is in question. And as we all know, it has really, nothing to do with integrity. It has a lot to do with Vegas. And if Vegas won't issue a line, then you've got yourself problems. But if the integrity of the game is questioned by Vegas, then there could be a severe problem, in which case you're going to get popped. Now, A couple problems that I have with this. First off, if you're going to suspend the GM, who cares if you suspend him for the first four games of the season? He's not the quarterback. He's not doing anything. He's doing the same thing I'm doing on Sunday. He's sitting on a couch and watching. That's as much as he's doing. You want to get, really get someone's attention? Suspend him during the draft. Suspend him during the first 4 days of free agency. Now you've got their attention. Now that's going to hurt. Suspend him for the first 4 weeks of the season? What's he doing? What is it that he's doing? He's not going to be able to sit up in the box and have a beer and watch the game? Aw. it's the NFL sometimes just confuses me. But one thing that I do wonder when I see these is it does make me wonder, where is all of the talk about the Patriots and Deflategate? When are we getting it? Remember that? Remember that? I know that seems like a long time ago. We've all kind of forgotten about that, that the Super Bowl champion team might have been deflating the footballs. Either one of two things is going to happen. They're going to sweep all that under the rug and just like, oh, we don't even remember. Were they doing that? I didn't even remember. Or they are laying the groundwork here and the Patriots are about to get blasted. I kind of think it's going to be the former, not the latter. I think the NFL would really, really be hurt to have to say our Super Bowl champion was found cheating. I think that would really hurt their integrity. You know the biggest problem I have, though, with both of these things, with the Falcons, with the Browns, is that both teams were horrible. That's my biggest problem. If you're going to cheat, can you win? The Falcons piped in the fake noise and made it harder for the other team on third downs, and the Falcons finished 6-10. And the Browns, for all their text messaging, whatever they were doing, hey, tell Johnny Manziel to, you know, stop snorting crack or whatever they're doing. I don't know what they're saying. The Browns went 7-9 and didn't make the playoffs. If you're going to cheat, and I understand most everyone is probably cheating on some level, but if you're going to use steroids, or you're going to deflate footballs, or you're going to court your bat, or hit your opponent over the knee with a crowbar so you can, you know, get at least, you know, have bounties, doctor your tires, Ryan Newman, whatever. Can you at least win? Yes, I did it. I cheated, and you know what? I won. These guys cheated, and they, you know, found ways to. I mean, the Falcons were pretty. It was pretty obvious that the ownership knew this was happening. They found that they were piping it in on purpose, and you still went 6-10. You still went 6-10. You couldn't win a game more. You couldn't get into the playoffs with your fake noise. If you're gonna cheat, at least win. At least win when you cheat. It's what separate. You know, it's what separates the you know, the Patriots from the Falcons. One win, one doesn't. Let's jump to the NBA a little bit. I want to talk a little bit of NBA basketball. Because, you know, there's been a lot of talk, and we've talked a little bit, you know, on this show. There's a lot of talk right now about the Oklahoma City Thunder. Oklahoma City Thunder. And what they have done this season. And the, you know, just scrappiness that the Oklahoma City has. I mean, here's Oklahoma City. They've had injuries to Russell Westbrook. They've had injuries to Serge Ibaka, you know, Kevin Durant. And despite all those injuries, and despite a coach in Scottie Brooks who seems, it almost seems like when the game is on the line, that he kind of just encourages his players, hey guys, just stand and watch what Russell's gonna do. It's probably gonna be amazing. Let's just stand and watch. Let's just see what let's see what he does. They don't like run anything. I'm watching Oklahoma City down the stretch, and I'm waiting. Hey, we're going to run some, you know, high screen and roll. We're going to run some screen and screener. We're going to, you know, run a little stagger and see if we can get somebody up. No, basically just everyone stands and watches Russell Westbrook and see. Oh, yeah, nice shot. That's good. That's a good shot. Good job. I can't figure out what Scottie Brooks does. I know he does something. I just don't know what it is. But despite all this stuff, Oklahoma City is still scrapping, and they're still fighting on. And they're still holding on to that number 8 seed at 42-32. 3 games ahead of New Orleans. And they probably, you know, they beat Phoenix recently. That probably pretty much finishes Phoenix's chances. They're probably done. There's only like 10 games left in the season. We're getting down to it. And they probably will be able to do enough to keep ahead of New Orleans and knock the Pelicans out of the playoffs. But you know the team that no one's really talking about? We're all talking about how scrappy Oklahoma City and what they're doing without their weapons. But, you know, this team, despite injuries of their own, the Houston Rockets are the number 3 seed in the West. Not in the East, not over in the East where who cares who the number 3 seed is. In the West, Houston is finding ways to get it done. And if you sit there and you say, well, yeah, but they haven't gone through what the Thunder have gone through. Wait a second. Dwight Howard has missed 38 games so far. Terrence Jones has missed 48 games so far, and Patrick Beverley has already missed 20 games, and he is now out for the duration of the season, barring some amazing recovery with the wrist injury. Somehow, though, James Harden is dragging this team forward. And when you look at their roster, you're going, how is he doing that? Because Houston is not teetering at the 8 seed. Houston has won 50 games. Houston is the 3 seed. And if it went to the playoffs right now, yes, they'd have to face San Antonio. But Houston is the 3 seed and would have home court advantage. And I know that Harden's game is not always pretty. It's not. Harden keeps finding a way to drag this team forward. His game, though, is effective. Yes, he can shoot it when he's open, but you know what Harden is so good at? He's so good at getting to the free throw line. And that is a very, very tough thing to defend. What do you do with him? He's going to find a way to get you to foul him. James Harden is finding a way. And look at his surrounding cast. Look at what Harden is doing this to. For as much credit as we give Russell Westbrook, we are not giving the same credit to James Harden and these Houston Rockets. And I don't know what they're going to do in the playoffs. I don't know if defensively, losing Patrick Beverley hurts them a lot. Because in the West, you're going to see really, really good point guard play. And having Patrick Beverley would have given them a better chance to play against those teams. So I don't know how they're going to do in the playoffs. But we can't underestimate what this team has done. Harden, 27 points a game. But look at the players he's doing this with. They're just getting Howard back now. Trevor Ariza is chipping in 13 points. Corey Brewer. Yes, our stupid local Denver Nuggets let him get away. I know you look at Corey Brewer, and he looks like he's about 105 pounds dripping wet. But he can run the floor. He can cause matchup problems. Because even though Corey Brewer is 105 pounds with all his clothes on, with his pockets full of lead, he's 6'9". You don't realize how big he is, and he can cause matchup problems. Josh Smith, here and there, chips in, gets some rebounds. You just got to – don't shoot the three. Don't shoot the three, Josh Smith, please. And like 50-year-old Jason Terry, how is this team the number 3 seed? I don't know if James Harden is the MVP, but he's got to be in the top 3. He's got to be in that conversation because the job he has done to keep Houston where they are at is absolutely nothing short of amazing. They're finding ways. As we get closer, like I said, we've got about 10 games left in the NBA, and then we're going to be getting to the playoffs very, very soon. Going to start looking next week and in the upcoming weeks at that playoff picture. And there's some interesting headlines that are coming out. There's some interesting storylines in those playoffs that are going to be coming out. We're going to have some interesting matchups, and we're going to have some teams facing each other that are going to be a lot of fun to watch. I want to keep an eye on Houston and see if they can just kind of keep it going. That's going to be an interesting team. As we do every single week, we've got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. And, you know, we do this every week. I've told you in the past. A lot of times I'll get some feedback. I agree with this. I disagree with this. I like this. I didn't like this. You're an idiot. You know, whatever it might be. But the Daily Dose Top 5, I always get a lot of feedback on. And maybe it's I love the Top 5. Maybe it's I disagree with this. Maybe this should have been higher or this should have been lower. Or you forgot about this or that. The Daily Dose Top 5, you never know which way it's going to go. Sometimes it entertains, sometimes it informs, sometimes it's just a kind of a trip down memory lane, which is where we're going to go today with the Daily Dose Top 5. Because the Daily Dose Top 5, you know, I'm looking at the Final Four, and I think this is a really, really fun Final Four that we have. I mean, Wisconsin versus Kentucky, that's a great matchup. That's a really, really good matchup. You got one team really, really good offensively in Wisconsin. You've got Kentucky really, really good defensively. That could be a great game. You may see a phenomenal game. You've got Duke, again, really, really good offensively, like to spread it, like to shoot it, versus just a hard-nosed, hard-hat and lunch bucket kind of team in Michigan State, and we know the toughness that a Tom Izzo team has. We could see two great games on Saturday. But I started thinking about that because you think about, maybe some early upsets. Sometimes you think of, maybe a miracle finish or the championship game. But, you know, there's been some really, really good Final Four games. There's been some really good Final Four games. And sometimes the Final Four, a game in the Final Four sometimes is better than the actual championship game itself. And so what we are going to count down today on the Daily Dose Top 5 is the greatest Final Four games. Now, I have one caveat to this. I can't go out and be talking about back in 1948, NYU beat Drake, and I wasn't there. I don't know. And yes, I can go back and you know, read the cliff drawings or whatever, the hieroglyphics, and find out about this white guy dropped 12 points on... I went with games I've seen, okay? What I'm trying to tell you is that I went with games that I've actually seen, as opposed to games that may have happened with Abraham Lincoln at the point. I had to go with games that I've actually saw. So, today, Daily Dose Top 5 Greatest Final Four Games, for me, of all time. Did you get the "for me" part? I'm not going all the way back. Number 5 on our list, Daily Dose Top 5, Greatest Final Four Games, 2006, Georgia Tech 67, Oklahoma State 65. And you may remember this game. Georgia Tech led by 7 at the half. Okie State comes all the way back, rallied, and tied the game. A couple players for Oklahoma State you might remember. Tony Allen had 13 in this game. You remember John Lucas III? Kept cutting up to John Lucas up in the stands. John Lucas III hits a three to tie it with 24 seconds left. And this game was relatively tight the whole way. The last minute of this game was phenomenal. Low-scoring game, well-played game. Both teams played very well. Georgia Tech, you might remember, Jarrett Jack and the job he did getting that team. They actually went to the championship where they lost to UConn, but Jarrett Jack. And then with just like 2 seconds left, Will Bynum drives down into the paint, gets the layup. Lucas brought it the other way and chucked it just from that the other side of half court and missed it. And Georgia Tech went on 67-65. You know what you might remember? Because you might have kind of forgotten that game. That was a very, very good game. Entertaining game. Do you remember the big red-haired kid for Georgia Tech? Luke Sesheny or Sesheny, something like that. He looked like Ronald McDonald. In fact, I think I saw a sign up in the stands that was a picture of Ronald McDonald, and this is way back, Ronald McDonald saying, "Luke, I am your father." Do you remember that one? You might remember that team. That was a very, very good game. Very good game. Number 4 on our list, greatest Final Four games, 1987. Indiana 97, UNLV 93. Now, this was the UNLV team before the championship game. This wasn't that championship team. And this team was on a 22-game win streak going into this game. You remember this team? Armand Gilliam, Mark Wade, Jarvis Bassnight, Gerald Patio. Fearless Freddie Banks had 38 points. And, of course, UNLV came out with that pressure, that amoeba defense that they ran under Jerry Tarkanian. But, you know, Indiana, that didn't bother them. I mean, they faced more pressure like that every day with Bob Knight in their practice sessions. They didn't wilt under that. And in this game, although it was, you know, UNLV that with all the, they're going to score and they're going to be a pull-up. Armand Gilliam had 32 points. Freddie Banks had 38 points. Indiana didn't go anywhere. Dean Garrett chips in 18. Keith Smart has 14. And Steve Alford, yes, your current coach at UCLA, Steve Alford, with the feathered hair and the short shorts, Steve Alford has 33 points on 10 of 19 shooting and 11 of 13 at the line. Steve Alford found a way to win. You looked at this game. I remember staying up to watch this game. I believe this was the second game. And I remember thinking, oh man, UNLV is just going to come out and outscore them. Indiana does not know what they're in for. Indiana didn't care a bit. They were like, you want to score? Let's run. Let's score. Let's shoot. We can shoot it just as well as you can. And Steve Alford could. People forget how good Steve Alford was. Number 3 on our list, greatest five Final Four games of all time. 1993, Michigan 81, Kentucky 78. And this game did go to overtime. This was the Fab Five coming back as sophomores. And they had, you know, gone the year before. They faced Duke. They get beat by Duke and kind of blown out by Duke. And they get back to the Final Four, this time as sophomores. They face Jamal Mashburn. They face Travis Ford, Dale Brown. Mashburn had 26, ended up fouling out, and the Wolverines hold on in overtime. Behind 27 points from Chris Webber. Ray Jackson, the forgotten member of the Fab Five, had 11. Juwan Howard had 17, and Jalen Rose made play after play after play down the stretch and scored 18 points. Michigan overcomes Kentucky in overtime. You know, the thing I remember about this game is I remember Rose just kept finding ways to make plays, but I remember him talking to Mashburn, and Mashburn ends up fouling out. And what they say, and this is from Jalen, so I don't know how much you could take of what Jalen said is gospel. They say that when Jamal Mashburn fouled out, that Jalen Rose went over and put his arm around him and said, "Man, this is so sad. You're going to be crying, and your mom's going to be watching, and she's going to be crying too." typical Fab Five. You had to love Jalen Rose yapping nonstop. Number three on our list, Michigan over Kentucky in overtime. Number two on our list, Daily Dose Top Five Greatest Final Four Games. I hate to say, we got to go back to Michigan. 1989, Michigan 83, Illinois 81. Now, for me personally, I will tell you right up front, this was my favorite game that I've ever seen college basketball-wise. This was an amazing game. 33 lead changes in this game. It was 1 point one way, 1 point the other way, back and forth all day. And this Illinois team was loaded. Kenny Battle had 29 in this game. Nick Anderson had 17. Kendall Gill had 11. And if you remember, Battle drives into the free throw line and hits a tough jumper with about 32 seconds left, falling down, maybe getting fouled, ends up on the ground, knocks down the jumper to give them a lead. Michigan comes down. Ramil Robinson drives around, can't really get anything open, ends up kicking it out to Terry Mills, and Mills takes a three that's just a little long, bounces off the rim and long, and Sean Higgins is there with 2 seconds left, taps it back in. Michigan goes on. And you might not remember this, but you know, Steve Fisher was you know, up there as an interim coach at the time. They had fired their coach and they had given him the interim coach. They didn't quite say, "You're our guy." They ended up going on and beating Seton Hall in the game after this in the championship to win it all for Michigan. But it was off of a great game against Illinois. You know, a couple other stat lines for you. Glenn Rice in this game for Michigan with 28 points. Ramil Robinson had 14. And of course, who could forget Loy Vaught chipping in with 10 of his own. That to me, that was one of the most fun games I've ever seen, just because it was so back and forth. So many lead changes and such a great, great game. Michigan over Illinois in 1989. But our number one greatest Final Four game. What else can I go with? Not only was it one of the biggest upsets ever, it kind of changed basketball a little bit. 1991, Duke 79. UNLV 77, because, you know, UNLV finished the season 27-0, went into the tournament undefeated, very similar to Kentucky this year. It didn't look like anyone, I shouldn't even say that, because Kentucky at least looks like they have flaws. It didn't look like anyone could play with UNLV this year. They were running everybody out of the gym. Larry Johnson, Stacey Ogman, Anderson Hunt, Greg Anthony, Greg Ackles, wasn't there an Ackles in there? Moses Scurry, was he on this team? I'm pretty sure he was. And you know, UNLV had beaten Duke by 30 the previous year in the championship game. There was no reason to think this was going to be any different. But Duke shoots 52% from the field and 81% at the line. Bobby Hurley has 12, Brian Davis has 15, and Christian Laettner had a phenomenal game, scoring 28. Duke pulled off the upset. You know, the one thing, if you've seen the documentary on UNLV, I believe it's on HBO, the day before the game when they went to the shootaround, Jerry Tarkanian is telling his guys, "You do not look ready to play. You're going to get beat if you don't figure it out. If you don't think you can be beaten, they're going to beat you. This team is capable of beating you. They've wanted you since 365 days ago. And you got that feeling from his team like there is no one can beat us. We can't be beaten. No one can beat us. And Duke somehow pulled that off, giving Coach K his championship just 2 days later. Got the win, I believe it was over Kansas. Duke ends up, but Duke over UNLV, we got to give them the number one spot. It's, you know, it was a huge upset. No, it's not my favorite game, but I already told you, I'm not the biggest Duke fan that's out there. Hey, we should have a fun weekend. Saturday games, we've got two of them, and then, of course, Monday night championship should be a lot of fun. Next week on the show, we will recap the championship game. And you know, as we usually do, we've got to probably hand out a few college basketball awards, don't we? It's what we usually do here on the Daily Dose. You know, the NBA, like I told you, the NBA is only about 10 games from being to the playoffs, and we're going to have to start talking about some of those matchups that we're going to be seeing. NFL is getting ready to start getting ready for the draft. We will start looking at the draft. We've got to get to some Major League Baseball. Give you some thoughts that I have on the upcoming Major League Baseball season. I know I blast MLB a lot, but we will talk a little bit of Major League Baseball. And as usual, like we do every week, we will give you the Daily Dose Top 5. Like I told you before, if you would like to reach out to me, feel free to hit me on Twitter at Daily Dose Sports, on Facebook, Daily Dose Sports, and check out our website. I really would encourage you. You'll like it. DailyDoseSports.wordpress.com. You can see some of the articles and some of the things that I put up there. If you get a chance, I'm asking you, please go to iTunes. Please give that 5-star rating to the podcast. Give us a nice review. Again, Clint Daly is a genius. How does he ever come up with this stuff? He is absolutely amazing. Any of those lies you want to tell, we're all for that. I will see you all next week. As usual, I cannot do this without JSP. Thank you so much for all that you do for me. I will see you next week. Have a great week, everybody. Enjoy the championship game.